This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is just gone past 7:20 in the morning. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Philip C. Now, in about half an hour, we're going to ask, why did Bank Negara maintain rates despite many expecting a cut in response to MCO 2.0, where we'll be speaking to Julia Goh of UOB Bank to find out. And of course, it's also the topic of our poll this morning on Twitter. We are asking you whether you're confident about the Malaysian economy in 2021. But in the meantime, let's talk about this very sobering topic, which is the rise of domestic violence during the MCO. Because during the first movement control order at the start of last year, NGOs like the Women's Aid Organization reported a spike in domestic violence reports.
As survivors found themselves trapped in close confines with their abusers, now, halfway through the second movement control order, welfare organizations have warned that measures need to be taken in order to prevent a similar spike in cases, especially if the MCO continues longer than the 2 weeks initially prescribed. So what are the lessons we can learn from the first MCO that might help us avoid a similar situation this time around?
So for some insights on this and especially what policy measures can be addressed, we speak this morning to Natasha Dandavati, who is the head of campaigns at the Women's Aid Organization. Natasha, thanks for joining us. Now, like we said, we saw a spike in the number of domestic violence cases reported during the first round of MCO. Are we seeing a repeat of this?
So since we're still fairly early into the new MCO, we don't quite have the data around this yet, but we are expecting an increase in the number of calls and inquiries to our hotline as survivors are increasingly isolated at home with their abusers, which we saw the first time around. So WAO is definitely preparing for an increase in inquiries to our hotline, but we aren't necessarily expecting it to be as much of a spike as what we saw with the first MCO. And the reason for this is that we think people might be more prepared and aware in terms of having emergency plans in place and also knowing what support is available and how to seek it out.
So Natasha, what is also being done on a government level to address this, having had the experience of the MCO to go off on? What has the engagement been like with the Women's Ministry?
So two positive measures we've seen recently with the passage of Budget 2021 are the allocation of 700 million ringgit for the My Step program, through which there will be 50,000 job opportunities in the public sector. And this is important because income instability, while not being the cause of domestic violence, can definitely be an aggravating factor. And of course, many households have been impacted by one or more spouses losing their employment during the pandemic. And we believe this also exacerbated domestic violence during the initial MCOs. Additionally, for women in particular, a lack of income independence can also be an obstacle to leaving an abusive situation. So the creation of more job opportunities is an important measure to address this. The government also allocated 21 million ringgit for domestic violence shelters. And shelters are part of the critical infrastructure needed to ensure that survivors always have an option of somewhere to go if they do choose to leave the abusive home. Now, while both these measures are important, it is still critical that the government take some additional steps to ensure that domestic violence response remains consistent to meet the potentially higher number of cases. Specifically, the government must immediately issue very clear SOPs around the mechanisms for obtaining protection and support, including filing police reports, accessing protection orders, and getting referrals to government shelters during the current and any subsequent MCOs. And beyond this, it's also critical that we put in place a comprehensive national action plan to address domestic violence, both during the current pandemic and beyond.
And you mentioned that the government needs to input clear SOPs on getting protection orders and such. Now, has there been some confusion on that front that the WAO has actually seen?
We did see some confusion in the aftermath of the first MCO last year, where some survivors went to the police station to file a report and were actually sent home and told to come back after the MCO had ended. So we did hear of some situations like that, in addition to when it came to police reports, also with regard to getting protection orders. And although it did become clear later on during the MCO that survivors could still get police reports and obtain protection orders, there was definitely some initial confusion and lack of clarity. And so to avoid that, we hope that the government will issue SOPs to make it very clear, both for survivors as well as for the frontline responders.
So right now, what recourse do domestic violence survivors have? I mean, the government has said that the civil service will continue to function, but has that really been translated onto the ground?
So again, survivors are still able to make police reports, obtain protection orders, and access NGO shelters. They can also obtain advice and support via both WAO's hotline as well as the Thalian Kase hotline run by the Ministry of Women. That being said, it is again critical that the government issue both SOPs as well as public service announcements, not only to assure that survivors that help will be available to them if they need it, but also so that all frontline responders are clear on the protocols and procedures during the MCO, and so that we don't have another situation where a survivor is turned away when seeking help.
Now, the WAO was also involved in the formation of numerous pieces of legislation, including anti-stalking and the Gender Equality Act. Now, are these all in limbo with the state of emergency that's currently in place?
Yes, it is true that numerous pieces of legislation and legal amendments will likely be stalled and not passed until the emergency is no longer in place and Parliament convenes again. But that being said, we do hope that the government will still work towards finalizing the draft laws through continued engagement with civil society, as well as by briefing MPs on the provisions of the proposed legislation, so that when the time comes, these laws can be passed without further delay.
And Natasha, finally, are there any lessons that we can take from the first MCO to ensure that we don't see the same spike in domestic violence cases, particularly if this MCO goes on for longer than the initially prescribed 2 weeks?
So I think in addition to the things that we've already spoken about, the SOPs, particularly when it comes to shelter, during the first MCO last year, referrals to government-run shelters became unavailable, and most NGO shelters were at or over capacity. So some survivors actually had to be turned away, and they could not escape their abusive homes. So this time around, ensuring continuity and adequate capacity in the provision of shelter is especially critical. And beyond that, I think the first MCO and this pandemic on the whole has really demonstrated how critical it is that we have a comprehensive action plan in place for domestic violence response. And that includes during times of crisis, because we know, you know, throughout history, we've seen that crisis situations, whether it be a pandemic or a natural disaster, these situations do exacerbate gender-based violence. And we need to make sure that going forward, we are as prepared for that as we can possibly be. If anyone is being abused or knows somebody who is being abused, they can always reach out to WAO's hotline. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can access that by telephone or SMS or WhatsApp, and we will be happy to help.
Thank you for your time. That was Natasha Dandavadi, who is the head of campaigns at the Women's Aid Organization, reminding us this very critical point, which is that we need to be prepared. We need to have a comprehensive plan that allows, you know, victims of domestic abuse to be able to reach out for help, regardless of whether it is COVID-19 or non-COVID-19 era, or even beyond COVID-19, if there was any national emergency, let's say flooding, and you're impacted by it, where can you go? What are your options? And you can imagine you're already feeling very desperate and you feel that you're trapped at home with someone that you don't, you know, that is abusing you. What do you feel? What are your options? And it's important for everyone to know what those options are.
I think the public is a bit more prepared because of what happened in MCO1. And we've seen a lot of effort and action taken. Of course, some of it did fall flat, if you recall. So this time around, MCO2, as Natasha was saying, it's a bit too early to see whether there's a spike. But I do agree that, you know, as this MCO lingers longer and we enter the second week of MCO, you're going to see the strain in relationships coming through. And that's going to really cause and potentially affect and cause an increase in numbers here. So something to be really vigilant about.
Yes. And the other thing, of course, is that we still need to push ahead with that policy agenda, yes, or the reform agenda. That's very, very important, whereby we don't ignore the pieces of legislation that have unfortunately been stalled at the moment. I mean, the reality is that government still needs to run. We can't forget that it's important that legislation still needs to be enacted. People still need to be protected. So I think these are, you know, issues that we still need to kind of continue to focus on. But up next, we'll be discussing President Biden's inauguration and, of course, Trump's legacy. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.